I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. With school out for the summer, kids have more free time than ever, and what better way to spend that time than getting engrossed in a good book? Your youngster could search for a lost city in the Amazon jungle, or maybe they'll fight to save the world in an intergalactic quest with who else but a robot? Regardless of what adventures they choose, a fun read is a great way for your child to while away the long summer months. Today, the Johnson County Librarians return with the best summer books for kids. From kindergartners to high school seniors, there's a little something for everyone. On Up to Date, after this hour's news. It's a tradition here at Up to Date. Early each summer, we bring in our three favorite Johnson County youth librarians and have them recommend the best stuff they've come across of late. It's a good time to do it, as so many young people have lots of time to stretch out with a good book. We're doing it again this morning, and if actual, genuine, real-life kids are out there listening to this and want to take a crack at live radio, we'd like to hear from them, too, about what they're reading this summer. You can call this number, 816-235-2888. You can call it right now, and we'll get you on the air. Once again, our Johnson County librarians are retired librarian Debbie McLeod. Debbie, it's always good to have you back.
Thanks for having us, Steve.
Dennis Ross is Director of Youth Services at the Johnson County Public Library. Dennis.
Good morning.
And Kate McNair is back. She's a Teen Services Coordinating Librarian. Kate, nice to have you.
Thanks. We're glad to be here, too.
Do you do lots of coordinating?
I try.
That's what a coordinating librarian does.
Yes. I haven't quite figured out all of the aspects of coordinating, but I'm very good at Excel documents. So.
There you go. Well, let's give people an idea of how this is going to work. We'll start with Kate, who's going to talk about a book titled Scythe, and it's by Neil Schusterman.
Yes. I'm going to start us off with a bang. This book is good for high schoolers who are looking for like the next great kind of dystopia series to start on over the summer. It's set not far in the future when humans have conquered death. Or perhaps more accurately, we've basically created like the Uber Siri, which is a super smart computer called the Thunderhead. And that benevolent computer has cured aging, disease, and taken over all global governments, so there's no more war or poverty. You can't die from old age or cancer or even jumping off a building. The only thing that can kill you is a scythe. Think of these as like government grim reapers. They're a special group of human beings that are given the ability and a quota to kill people and keep the population in check. So they're feared by a lot of people, but a lot of...
What kind of mind comes up with a plot
like this? I know.
This, where are we going
this
here?
This author has some really interesting books, and this is one of my favorites of his new series. It's also just been optioned for a movie, so I'm really excited about the potential there. But to become a scythe, you have to be apprenticed. You don't take an aptitude test. You don't undergo some sort of coming-of-age ceremony and get chosen to be one. You have to be apprenticed to a scythe. And so in an unusual situation, Scythe Faraday chooses two apprentices, Citra and Rowan, and neither of them really want to be a scythe. But they come under his wing. They learn the art of killing people using blades and poison. But they also learn how to comfort the family of the fallen and what kind of compassion the job really
they're,
takes.
They're full service providers here,
exactly.
It sounds like.
Yeah. But then Scythe Faraday dies unexpectedly, and it's claimed to be a suicide, but they both believe that maybe there's some nefarious undertones to that death. And they are both apprenticed to two very different scythes, and the Conclave of Scythes decides that there's only room for one of them to join the Conclave in the fall. And so they will have to undergo tests, and the one who wins those tests will be made a scythe, and the first person that they will have to kill will be the other one. So pitted in a game of life and death.
Ah, I see. That book, again, if you dare to open that one up, is Scythe by Neil Schusterman. Again, for high school kids, it sounds
like. Yes, the body count really moves it up there.
Yeah, so you got to get the who's going to be in the movie, do you know?
No, they just optioned it. So I don't think they've found directors, actors. I don't even know if they've written a script yet, but it's going to be awesome.
I think Debbie McLeod ought to be in Scythe.
Yes. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Let's see. I know there is. I want to be that female Scythe.
Yes, there's a lot of Scythes, and they're all named after like scientists and famous artists. It's really fun.
It's like once you become a Scythe, you get a new identity. So your old identity is gone. And so you become, one was called Colbert. I loved that.
Oh, is that right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Did you read this book too then?
Yes, I did.
So you sort of go beyond your, you range far and wide here, it sounds like.
Oh, yes. I do my best.
Debbie reads everything.
Debbie reads everything.
Yes, I do.
Well, speaking of Debbie, let's go to Debbie with The Quest for Z by Greg Pozzoli. And this is for kids kindergarten through fourth grade, so a different demographic here.
Right. Totally something totally different. And the subtitle of this book is The True Story of Explorer Percy Fawcett and the Lost City in the Amazon. Earlier this spring, there was a movie called The Lost City of Z.
I saw the film.
Okay. Yeah. And this is the story.
Good film.
This is, this is the picture book story about him. And back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, the rock stars were the explorers. Everybody loved explorers. You wanted to be an explorer. You didn't want to be there were no rock stars.
Well, but there were still places on the planet that hadn't been explored yet.
Right,
so that was a different time.
I mean,
time.
especially in the Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
In 1911, Hiram Bingham found Machu Picchu. So there was a lot of, everyone was going to Latin America, South America, because they just knew that there had to be these other civilizations that had been lost. And Percy Fawcett felt that there was one called the Lost City of Z, or he called it Z, and he did a number. He used to work for the Geographic Society of Britain, and they would have him go and map the rivers and stuff. And he just felt that there was, he had heard from the natives there that there were, you know, old temples and ruins and stuff. So he was determined to find this city of Z. And he went back numerous times, and the last time he never came back. So it really is very fascinating. If you have kids out there who are interested in exploration, or, you know, just finding something really cool to discover. It's a really good book.
Well, the film is great. And I should just point out, we spoke with the author of the adult version of this story, The Quest for Z. That's David Gran.
Right.
Great guest, great interview. And that's available here online at kcur.org.
Yes. It was just, you know, when I got this book, it was like, oh, my, I saw that movie.
Yeah.
So
it was a good film, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
It really was.
Okay.
I see movies, too.
Yeah.
Read books, see movies.
That's what we do. Okay. You have time for those things now.
Yes, I do.
You didn't used to.
I know.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on here to Dennis, who wants to talk about a book, Real Friends by Shannon Hale. This is for grades 3-6.
Yes, it is. It's a graphic memoir.
Ah.
And it's all about navigating the world of grade school friendships.
And graphic memoirs are something of a just a few years old in terms of how long they've been around.
Right, but we're seeing more of them. And it's about this girl named Shannon, the same name as the author, and her friend Adrienne, and they've been best friends ever since they were little, like since kindergarten. But one day, Adrienne starts hanging out with Jen, who's the most popular girl in the class, and she leads a circle of girls called the group. And it's really important to be either, you're either in the group or you're not in the group. And
it starts so young, doesn't it?
Yeah, this is early grade school, middle grade school, these girls, and so Shannon is kind of torn, like, am I in the group just because I'm friends with Adrienne, or is she going to ditch me and stay with them because they're the popular group, and all the other girls in the group, they all want to be, like, there's a ranking order. I want to be number one, and I'm number two, and I'll bully you so I can stay on top. And so anyway, we all know how it feels to lose a friend and actually find a real friend, too. So this book, I think, will resonate with young readers and with their parents who probably still remember those feelings. And the feelings and experiences that the kids have are really treated as realistic, and they're treated with respect. They're not, you know, not talked down to. So
I remember when my kids were going through the elementary school years, and we were always told that the fights among the girls were more vicious than the fights that the boys endured. And I used to hear stories, and I think maybe there's some truth to that. It's just amazing what happens with kids, even in elementary school.
Well, this one's just particularly well done.
Yeah. That book, again, is titled Real Friends by Shannon Hale. Dennis says it's good for grades 3-6. Okay. Dennis, thanks. If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date, and we're going through a whole batch of books for young readers for the summer, anywhere from even kindergarten all the way through high school, with our friends from the Johnson County Library. And if by any chance a kid wants to call, a real kid wants to call and share what he or she is reading this summer, we would love to hear from them. 816-235-2888 is the phone number. If you're too shy to talk, you can tweet us at KCUR. Up to date. Kate, let's come back to you here, and you want to talk about Born a Crime, Stories from a South African Childhood by Trevor Noah. The Trevor Noah.
Yes, mm-hmm. The Trevor Noah of Comedy Central fame. He's the host of The Daily Show now, and this book really does fall into the adult category, but I think it'd be of interest to upper high school readers, and even those that are getting ready to go to their freshman year that are looking for something that's kind of humorous, maybe a little bit challenging, and presents a different worldview than maybe what they're used to. The title of the book comes from the fact that Trevor Noah's mother is black and his father is white. So being together and having a child, especially under apartheid law in South Africa, was illegal. His light skin was a giveaway that of his parents' crime, and so he always could have been, or his mother could have been thrown in prison. So the book is really about his life as he grows up in South Africa. It goes from childhood all the way through young adulthood, and it's filled with this interesting stories that are blend between like the modern day technology, like he has a CD burner, that's about as modern as it gets. Let's remember it's the 90s, and the South African spiritualism. Like for instance, he plays a prank accidentally. He tells a lie, and he convinces his grandmother that their house is haunted. And so she has to have everybody in the neighborhood come and try and exorcise the demon from their house. So it's this weird blend between the two. But it's got just a really fun voice. So we have a read aloud for you. And I'm going to set it up because this one definitely needs some context.
All right.
So Trevor Noah, he had a CD burner and he had an internet connection, which was like the height of everything in the day then. So he would download songs and he became a DJ. He would burn them onto CDs and he would hire out his services at parties. And then his friends began to create this like dance troupe. So he would DJ, his friends would come out and break dance during the songs. And so he got hired to do a lot of parties. Well, one of his best friends... Well, actually, maybe I should back up. So in South Africa, generally people are given two first names, an African name and an English name. But they don't always, they don't know a lot of English names. And most of the ones that they have are pulled from news stories. So there's a lot of people named Clinton, people named even like historical figures from European history. So you'd have people named after British prime ministers or even Mussolini or Hitler. He was in a lot of books, and people didn't really understand the context, and so they would name their kid Hitler. And so one of his best friends and the best guy in his dance troupe is named Hitler. So at the beginning of this story that we're going to read aloud now, Trevor Noah and his friends have been hired to DJ a dance at a Jewish school.
Okay, and Coy Duggar from KCUR's Up to Date team is going to read from Born a Crime, Stories from a South African Childhood. Coy?
Are you ready to rock out? Yeah! Make some noise! Yeah! I started playing. The bass was bumping, my crew was dancing, and everyone was having a great time. The teachers, the chaperones, the parents, hundreds of kids, they were all dancing like crazy. Our set was scheduled for 15 minutes, and at the 10-minute mark came the moment for me to play Let's Get Dirty, Bring Out My Star Dancer, and Shut It Down. I started the song. The dancers fanned out in their semicircle, and I got on the mic. Are you guys ready? Yeah! You guys are not ready. I said, are you ready? Yeah! All right, give it up and make some noise for Hitler! Hitler jumped out to the middle of the circle and started killing it. The guys around him were all chanting, go Hitler, go Hitler. Go Hitler, go Hitler. They had their arms out in front of them, bouncing to the rhythm. Go Hitler, go Hitler, go Hitler, go Hitler. And I was right there on the mic, leading them along. Go Hitler, go Hitler, go Hitler, go Hitler. The whole room stopped. No one was dancing. The teachers, the chaperones, the parents, the hundreds of Jewish kids in their yarmulkes, they froze and stared aghast at us up on the stage. I was oblivious. So was Hitler. We kept going. For a good 30 seconds, the only sound in the room was the beat of the music and me on the mic yelling, go Hitler, go Hitler, go Hitler. Put your hands in the air for Hitler, yo!
And that's going to be in my head all day now.
I know.
That's,
there
you go.
Yeah.
Coy Duggar reading from Born a Crime, Stories from a South African Childhood. Coy, thanks very much. Some good phone calls coming in here. Let's go to some of them now. Some recommendations for good books to read this summer for kids. Madeline is 10 years old, and she's from Kansas City, Missouri. Madeline, good morning.
Hi.
Hi. I'm glad you called.
Yeah. we were listening to the radio, and I was like, oh, I know a whole bunch of good books.
What, recommend a couple to us.
So one of my favorite book series is Legend of Zeta. It's a graphic novel, and it's really interesting.
Zeta the Space Girl.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What do you like about it, Madeline?
I like that it's like got a lot of action in it. It's got like different characters, and I also love that it's like it's on Earth, but it's also in like space in different areas in space. So it's really cool.
That's great. What else are you looking at this summer?
I'm reading that book. I already finished that series, but I'm reading other book series. And it's a really good series to read. I definitely recommend it.
Yeah. Can I ask you, where do you like to go to read? Where's your favorite spot to go read?
I either like to read up in like a park or something, like where it's nice and quiet, or maybe even in a library where like there's not supposed to be a lot of sound. But it's kind of hard to concentrate when you're reading, but that it's like in a really loud place. So it's kind of really hard to concentrate. So I like to go to a quiet place where it's not very loud, and
Well, I think that's really a good idea, and I'm betting you're a pretty good student.
Most of the time.
Well, most of the time.
Sometimes it all depends on what we're studying and stuff. So.
Right. Yeah, I get that. Hey, you are so good to give me a call. I'm really glad you called, Madeline. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoy the books, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to Allison from Olathe. Allison, you're on Up to Date.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a recommendation.
Yeah.
It's a book called Goodnight Stories for Rebel Girls. And it has kind of short stories about various famous women, Frida Kahlo, Marie Curie. There are lots of different stories, but the illustrations are very beautiful as well. And it's not just for girls. It's for boys, too.
Yes.
Good.
That sounds great. I'm glad you recommended it, Allison. That's Goodnight Stories for Rebel Girls, right?
Yep, that's it.
Thanks, Allison. Appreciate it.
Have a good day.
If others want to call, even kids, 816-235-2888 is the phone number, where you can tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. Debbie, let's go to A Whisper of Horses for grades 4-6. Tell us about it.
Yeah, this is a dystopian novel for younger kids. It takes place in the future, and you have Serendipity, who lives in Llandan, and which, of course, is old London. And London has become a walled city because of the gases, which had destroyed everything outside the walls, including all life, all wildlife, all plant life, everything. And there's this group that controls the city. Well, Serendipity has received a little figurine of a horse from her mother. Her mother dies, and before she does die, she does say, at one time there were horses, and I do believe that there are horses outside the walls. So Serendipity decides she's going to escape London and find these horses. And she does, and she meets up with a smuggler boy, Tab, and they go in search of the horses. Meanwhile, she has a past that she's not aware of, and she becomes the person that the authorities are really interested in. And what is her connection with the leadership of London? Who was her father? She never found out who her father was. Well, she does at the end of the book. But it's really pretty fascinating. And it's an adventure. It's a friendship between Serendipity and Tab, who has lived outside the gates of London and has disproved that, there is life outside these walls. So,
okay, that book again, A Whisperer of Horses, from Debbie McLeod. Okay, let's move on. Dennis has a recommendation here. Harris and Me, A Summer Remembered. The author is Gary Paulson. Tell us about it.
Yeah. And some people might recognize his name as the author of Hatchet and the other Brian books. This one is just an old personal favorite of mine. It's about a boy's One Boy's Unforgettable Summer. The stories in there really are sound like tall tales, but the only time I met the author, he swore to me that they were all true. There's a narrator who's 11 years old, and sometime in the early 1950s, and he's sent, because of some trouble at home, to spend the summer with relatives on this farm that's basically been carved out of the North Woods. And it's a lot of hard work, but his 9-year-old cousin makes life entertaining. He leads his cousin off on one wild adventure after another. Basically, every chapter is a different crazy story. And they're on this farm are Vivian, the ornery kicking cow, and Ernie, the attack rooster, and Louie, the hired hand with strange table manners, and his pet lynx, Buzzer, and Harris, his cousin's name Harris. His older sister, Glennis, is constantly whacking him over the head because he cusses. And so the episodes include things like getting stomped into the mud by 300-pound pigs, jumping from the hayloft onto the back of a draft horse like the cowboys in the movies, swinging from the barn on a rope like Tarzan, attaching the motor from the gas-powered washing machine to a bicycle, peeing on an electric fence. Most of these don't end well for Harris.
But these are true stories, it sounds like.
That's what the author said.
Yeah.
So the story that we're going to read is the one where they decided that it would be smart to jump. They've seen a cowboy movie, so they want to jump out of the hayloft onto the back of this huge draft horse named Bill and get the rustlers.
Sam Zeff from KCUR's newsroom is going to read a little bit from Harris and Me, A Summer Remembered. And folks might remember that Sam once upon a time peed on an electric fence. So
well, every time you go to the Kansas State House, it feels just a little bit like that.
A little bit down that road. You would know something about that, yeah. Harris and Me, A Summer Remembered.
Harris was less fortunate. He held onto the rope too long and released when he had already started swinging back toward the loft door. He missed Bill's front end and came down squarely on the horse's enormous rump, which was unfortunately actually as wide as a kitchen table. Harris's legs shot out sideways and his groin crunched with a sound I could hear from where I hung. Ugh! He grabbed himself and started to slide off Bill's back end. Bill, in the meantime, did exactly as a horse should do when something out of nowhere jumped on his back. Horses have reacted to predators jumping on their back for millions of years in one specific way. They buck hard, and when the predator is dislodged, they kick the bejesus out of it. Bill obeyed the genetic codes in his system and bucked as Harris hit him, driving Harris back up almost even with the loft door opening where I hung. Harris, legs straight out to the side, holding his groin tightly, did an almost perfect backward swan dive and was coming down on his head directly in back of Bill, where he would have crunched in the dirt and chicken mess. But Bill obeyed the second code, and just as Harris came into range, kicked one back hoof, a hoof as large as the top opening of a milk bucket, with a force just below nuclear. It caught Harris directly in the middle of the stomach and drove him backward into the barn so hard that I heard him skip twice across the barn floor.
Okay. That's Sam Zeff reading from Harris and Me, A Summer Remembered, and it sounds like quite a summer.
This is one of the top 10 funniest books I've ever read in my whole life. Yeah, it's very
entertaining. Does Harris make it to the end of the summer?
Oh, yeah.
Good question.
I wonder what Harris is doing now.
That's a good question.
Getting operation after operation. Probably. Stomach,
getting a new hip.
Yeah, new hip, probably. Yeah. That's Harris and Me, A Summer Remembered. Again, the author is Gary Paulson. Let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about a whole bunch of other great new books. And we hope a few kids will call, too. 816-235-2888. What are you reading this summer? What do you recommend to other kids? You can tweet us, too, at KCUR Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. We took a break yesterday, but on Wednesday we visited Johnson County's Arts and Heritage Center, the brand new one, which opens tomorrow. You can hear that conversation at kcur.org/uptodate and on the NPR One app. On Monday's show, the political transformation of Robert Kennedy in the three tumultuous years following his brother's assassination. And we discussed the issues of dark money in Missouri state politics. A whole lot of it going on in Missouri. We'll talk about it on Monday. Well, this hour we're talking with our three favorite Johnson County librarians about cool books to read this summer for kids. We're visiting with Debbie McLeod, Dennis Ross, and Kate McNair. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. And let's go, let's move on here to one from Kate, Defy the Stars by Claudia Gray. This is for middle and high school sci-fi fans.
Yes, this one is a good classic sci-fi for anybody who likes androids and thinking about what our future is going to be like when we've invented machines to do a lot of our work for us. It's set in a distant future where Earth has pretty much been destroyed by climate change, and so humans have fled the planet. We've learned to kind of control black holes, and we've created gateways to four other habitable planets. But one planet in particular is very Earth-like. It's called Genesis, and we send a lot of humans there, and they begin repopulating that planet. But pretty soon, as all empires know, that ruling from afar can be a little tricky. And so the people of Genesis eventually become tired of the tyranny of Earth's governments. And so they rise up in rebellion, and they start a 30-year war with Earth, trying to break free of Earth's tyranny. And so that's where our main character what is her name? I have forgotten it. I'm really bad with names in books. Noemi. Noemi is one of the warriors in this war, and she's been fighting it pretty much her whole life, and it doesn't look like anybody's going to win anytime soon. And her commanders have set a plan for basically a suicide mission. They're going to send as many ships as possible into the gate between Genesis and Earth and try and destroy it and hopefully delay Earth's tactics for a little while. And as she's planning this, they're doing a practice run, and all of a sudden Earth's ships show up and there's a battle. She ends up on this decommissioned Earth spaceship out that's been like left alone. It's completely abandoned except for one inhabitant. And she ends up on this ship with this inhabitant who she discovers is named Abel, and he is the most advanced android in the world or in the universe. And so she and Abel team up to try and create a plan that will help destroy the gate and save her world from Earth's forces. But there's everything that you could ever want from a sci-fi. There's like androids, and there's meteor belts, and there's laser blasters. It's a great, fun, really fast-paced read.
Okay. And the book, again, is Defy the Stars, the author, Claudia Gray. Middle and high school students, it sounds like?
Yes, middle and high school students. And you have to want to like a series, because this one does end you a little bit on a cliffhanger, and there will be another book in it.
And you got to go to the next one. Yeah. That's how it works these days.
Okay. Yes, it is.
W. McLeod, let's go to a book, Beyond the Bright Sea by Lauren Walk.
Yes, this is her second book. The first one was Wolf Creek, and I talked about that last year. In fact, it was a Newbery Honor book. It was so well done. This one is also beautifully written. It tells the story of Osh. She has lived on one of the Elizabeth Islands off the coast of Massachusetts. And nobody knows where she came from. She was found in a skiff that had washed ashore, and Osh rescued her. So she doesn't know where she came from. No, none of the islanders know where she came from. But there is a rumor that she came from a deserted island where there had been a leper colony. And so she feels somewhat ostracized. And it's been deserted for a long time. And then one night, she looks across and she sees a light on the island. And she decides that she wants to explore it. And Osh at first doesn't want her to do this, but he does eventually support her, along with their friend Miss Maggie, who lives on another one of the islands. And what they find out is really pretty fascinating.
Hmm. Well, we're going to read a little bit from this book, Beyond the Bright Sea. Sally Daly is going to read it here from KCUR. And Sally, let her rip.
My name is Crow. When I was a baby, someone tucked me into an old boat and pushed me out to sea. I was washed up on a tiny island, like a seed riding the tide. It was Osh who found me and took me in, who taught me how to put down roots and thrive on both sun and rain, and understand what it is to bloom. The island where we found each other was small but strong, anchored by a great pile of black rock that sheltered our cottage, a ramshackle place built from bits of lost ships, nestled on a bed of earth and sea muck, alongside a small garden and the skiff that took us wherever our feet could not. We didn't need anything else, not in the beginning. At low tide, we could cross easily to the next island, Cuddy Hunk, through shallows strewn with bootlace weed and minnows. At high tide, the cottage sat so close to the risen sea that it felt nearly like a boat itself. For a long time, I was happiest when the water rose and set us apart, on our own, so just the two of us decided everything there was to decide. And then, one night when I was 12, I saw a fire burning on Pinnakees, the island where no one ever went. And I decided on my own that it was time to find out where I'd come from and why I'd been sent away. But I didn't understand what I was risking until I nearly lost it.
Mm. That's Sally Daly from KCUR reading from Beyond the Bright Sea by Lauren Wolk. That book, Debbie, but for grades 4 through 6, mm-hmm. It looks like here.
Yes, it's okay. Really, really a good read. I highly recommend it.
Okay. Let's scoot on here. Dennis Ross wants to talk about Me and Marvin Gardens by Amy Sarig King. Marvin mm-hmm. Gardens, that's like the Monopoly thing, right?
That's exactly what it's like.
That's what this is.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's where we're going.
Yeah, this is about a little boy named Obi Devlin. And people, this is Amy Sarig King. It's her first book for younger readers. She's written a whole bunch of young adult books under the name A.S. King. So people who are familiar with her books know that she will often throw in something a little different or actually just downright weird. And that's mm-hmm. what happens in this one, too. Obi's 11 years old, and he lives in the Pennsylvania farmhouse that his family built 100 years ago. And unfortunately, his great-great-grandfather had to mortgage a lot of the land off, and so there's just a little bit left that surrounds the house. And there's a lot of housing developments that are rapidly coming in, and he's not happy about that. It encroaches on land that used to belong to the family. And on their land is a little creek, and he spends a lot of time going down to the creek and cleaning it up, digging people's trash out of it. And one day when he's down there, he comes across what he's pretty sure is a new species of animal.
Hmm.
It's got a snout like a boar and a body and a tail like a dog, but there's no fur or hair. And it's got slimy, algae-like skin. And so he names the creature Marvin Gardens because of his dad's love of the game Monopoly. Yeah, and he can tell pretty soon that he needs to keep Marvin secret.
Yeah.
Just to keep him safe. Marvin eats only plastic. He will not eat anything but plastic. He doesn't care what kind of plastic it is. He likes the orange plastic from those fences that they put up on construction sites. And he likes.
Well, that'd be cool.
That's his favorite, yeah.
We
so,
need some of those.
Yeah, well, and of course some tension and it creeps into the story later. You have to read it to find out what that is. But just like in her teen books, she uses, you know, fantastical or magical or really totally absurd situations and to illustrate very real issues and very real feelings.
Okay.
And this time it's the environment and friendship and bullying and just dealing with the necessity of dealing with change. But she's not preachy about it.
That book again, Me and Marvin Gardens by Amy Sarig King for grades 4 through 7, right, Dennis?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and anybody who likes something a little weird.
Okay. We got some folks who've been waiting for a while who have some recommendations for us at 816-235-2888. We're looking for kids to call. We like kids here. 816-235-2888. Jane from Rosedale. And Jane, just for the record, is not a kid, but it's nice to have you, Jane.
Well, I can't. You know, I'm 22. I'm just aging out of it. And I still read a lot of young adult fiction because there are many fabulous authors.
That's where the good stuff is.
The first one I would like to recommend is called The Blue Girl by Charles D. Lint. And it's about this, it's a high school age book, but it's about this girl named Imogene Yuck. And her senior year, she and her mom and her brother move to a new town. And she's like kind of a punk rocker, and she has tattoos and wears thrift store clothes, and she doesn't fit in. And she makes one friend named Maxime. And when she moves to this town, she notices a lot of like weird supernatural stuff starts happening. And these shadows keep following her around. And basically, some really weird adventures happen. And in one of them, she turns completely blue and does so for a couple weeks. And it's a really interesting story about fitting in and dealing with change and, kind of switching from like being a teenager to adult life, and there are ghosts knights and fairies, and it's really good.
Yeah. Well, that's a great recommendation, Jane. And just for the record, when you're 22, you're still a kid, okay?
Thank you. And I actually had one more recommendation.
Just name the title, Jane, because I got lots of other callers I got to get to here.
It's called The Black Prism by Brent Weeks.
Oh, okay. And you know that one?
Yeah,
okay. And her first recommendation was The Blue Girl by Charles Deland. Jane, thanks very much.
You're very welcome.
You bet. Yep. Let's go to Leanne from Prairie Village. Leanne, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Hi. Well.
Well, yeah. So I'm not a kid, but I have two kids myself, and their favorite series is called Horrible Histories.
Oh,
and within
yeah.
Oh, this yeah. series, you've got great books like The Groovy Greeks and Rotten Romans and Terrible Tudors. And it's just a great way to make history relevant to kids. You can ask my 8-year-old, gosh, you know, who are the wives of Henry VIII? And he'll say, oh, they were divorced, beheaded, died, divorced, beheaded, survived. So, you know, they tell you all the crazy things, you know, you get to learn who Boudicca was, who I didn't even know in the Celts. So it's just a great way to make history relevant and to make it fun and not something that you have to do in school.
Okay. That's a great recommendation, Leanne. Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
You bet.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Matt from Baldwin on the Kansas side. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Hey. Yeah, and the last caller mentioned Boudicca in Celtic mythology. That's where you get the word bodacious, as in a woman who's powerful and puts it out there.
Oh, okay.
Speaking of which, I've got a recommendation for a book by a local author named Roderick Townley. And the name of the book, I bought a copy of it for my niece, is A Bitter Magic. And it's about, you know, a magical young woman who I think lives in either a golden castle or something is gold. There's, I think she has a pet lobster. And it somehow has these prescient sort of powers or something. The whole book is kind of, my scan of it was that it's kind of a surrealistic, quirky thing that I think would really get kids, young adults, to, you know, let's say think outside the box. And if you can ever attend a reading by Roderick Townley, he himself is a very striking guy. He's about 7 feet tall and this gentle, tough giant who is in him. He's almost like a Roald Dahl character himself. He's really a marvelous author and an interesting person.
Well, if you're going to have a pet lobster, of course it's got to have supernatural powers, right? Because they would go hand in hand. Debbie, do you know?
I'm familiar with the author. He has a number of books, and he's been writing for quite a while.
Right. Okay. That book again, A Bitter Magic. Matt, thanks very much.
Sure. Thanks.
Bye. Debbie, let's go to another book here from Nikki Grimes. This book is titled One Last Word.
Yes, this is a series of poems based on the Harlem Renaissance. And Nikki Grimes has just received the Laura Ingalls Wilder Award for Lifetime Achievement in Children's Literature. And she is a very prolific poet. And in this, she uses a technique called the golden shovel. And in it, she takes one line out of a poem, and then the last word in her poem that she makes corresponds with a word in that line. It's really pretty. I mean, crafts, you know, wise, it's amazing. But these poems are about, she uses poets from the Harlem Renaissance. The first poem will be by Langston Hughes, and then the following poem will be a poem that she created using a line from the poem that Langston Hughes has written.
Well, CJ Janovee from KCUR is going to read a little bit from this book. Again, it's titled One Last Word for Grades 5-8. CJ.
Okay, the first poem is by Langston Hughes. It's called The Negro Speaks of Rivers. I've known rivers. I've known rivers ancient as the world and older than the flow of human blood in human veins. My soul has grown deep like the rivers. I bathed in the Euphrates when dawns were young. I built my hut near the Congo and it lulled me to sleep. I looked upon the Nile and raised the pyramids above it. I heard the singing of the Mississippi when Abe Lincoln went down to New Orleans, and I've seen its muddy bosom turn all golden in the sunset. I've known rivers, ancient, dusky rivers. My soul has grown deep like the rivers.
That's from Nikki Grimes wrote it. The book again, One Last Word.
Oh, well, she was going to read the poem now that
Nikki Grimes.
Yeah, so you turn the page and here's Nikki Grimes.
Here's Nikki Grimes. Okay.
David's Old Soul. As far back as I can remember, my mother has called me an old soul. I never understood. But now that our family has dwindled to just Mom and us kids, I've grown into a man. You do what you have to do, David. Dig deep, is the whisper in my ear. So I stand strong like a tree my baby brothers can lean on. I try to be the raft that helps carry them over this life's rough rivers.
Mm, that's great. Mm-hmm. From Nikki Grimes, the book again, One Last Word. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. We're talking about some good kids' books for summertime reading, some great recommendations here. Let's go to 10-year-old Ellie from Kansas City. Ellie, good morning to you.
Good morning. I'm calling about the Penny Royal Academy. It's a really great book, and if you like things like dragons and witches. It's Penny Royal Academy is where they train knights and princesses. But when you think of princesses, you shouldn't think of all the what you'd think of in a Disney movie. Mm-hmm. These right. girls are strong, and it takes a lot to even survive Penny Royal Academy, much less stay in it till your third year. So,
Ellie,
it's really cool.
How did you know I like dragons?
I didn't.
I just love them. I'm so glad you recommended this book, Penny Royal Academy. The author is M.A. Larson, right?
Yes.
Can I ask you what I asked another kid who called today? Like, where do you like to go to read if you have your favorite spot?
Well, I like to read on the puff in my room.
On the what in your room?
It's like a beanbag, but it's stuffed animals.
That's so cool. That's so cool. And can you sit there for a long time?
Yeah.
That's great. That's great. Ellie, I really appreciate you taking time to call us today.
Thanks.
Okay. Have a good summer. Bye-bye. Okay. More good recommendations there.
Yeah, I love a good book about Kick Butt Girl.
Yeah, that sounded right. great, didn't it?
That sounds great.
I like it.
Kate, let's move on to a book, New Superman 1.
Yes, this one actually is not quite out yet, so I'm preempting a little bit. It comes out on June 22nd at the library, or June 27th, sorry, is like a bound edition. But the comics are out now, and that's what I've read. And this is a new take on Superman. It's part of DC's Rebirth series. It's about a guy named Kenan Kong, who there's like nothing heroic about him. In fact,
so the comic books come out first, and then the
book comes. Actual like issues come out, and then a bound edition will come out in June. So you can check it out from the library in June. You can pick it up at your local comic book shop now. Yeah, and so it'll have the first 12 issues.
Yeah.
So it's about a guy named Kenan Kong. He's not heroic at all. He's more like a bully. He, in fact, like the day that the events start in the story, he is beating up one of his classmates for some of his lunch. And they get attacked by a supervillain, and Kenan accidentally rescues his classmate, which is caught on camera, and people paint him as heroic. And he comes to the attention of the Ministry of Self-Reliance, a government agency that's trying to create China's own superheroes. And they decide that he is their Superman. And so through some crazy technology that they've invented, they imbue Kenan with the powers of Superman. But my favorite thing about the story is that he does what like every teenage boy who had like suddenly got Superman's powers would do. Like he uses X-ray vision to like check out girls, and he like flies to impress his friends, and he uses like super strength to get the attention of the super cute reporter who's been like following his story. And so it's just really great for comic fans who've been a fan of Superman. This is like a new take. It's going to feel a little familiar but really fresh. And for fans who have not read any Superman, it's awesome because you don't need to know any of the characters. They're all brand new. You don't have to have the backstory.
Oh, wow. Guys are so predictable, aren't they, Kate?
Even super ones.
Does the library carry comic books?
We don't carry the issues, but when they come out in the bound hardcovers, like this one on June 27th, we'll have that in the library.
So you can come get bound hardcovers of
other
comics, too?
Oh, yeah, we have a huge graphic novel collection.
Oh.
Humongous, and they circulate like crazy.
Mm-hmm. I bet they do.
They can be a really expensive habit if you buy them on your own, so it's great to get them from the library.
That's for sure.
Because they go so fast to read. You know, you can read a comic book in maybe an hour.
Well, I'm going to date myself here. When I was a kid, the comic books cost 12 cents, yeah. but they don't
yes.
cost
12
cents.
Like this is $2.99 for an issue.
Yeah. That stretches a kid's budget pretty fast.
I mean, they're nice glossy pages with color, you know, illustrations. So
yeah,
you're paying for
great.
Some good quality.
Okay. Mm-hmm. New Superman 1 by Jean
Luen Yang.
Luen Yang. Okay. Mm-hmm. Sounds good. Debbie, The Unexpected Life of Oliver Cromwell Pitts.
Yes, this is a book by Abby. He's gone back to his historical fiction roots, and it tells the story of Oliver Cromwell Pitts, who was named after Oliver Cromwell. It takes place in the late 1600s, early 1700s, and he lives on a seaside town in England. And his father is a lawyer. He's not very popular because he pretty much calls it like it is on his town. But he has all sorts of adventures. His sister goes off to London. Something happens to her. His father takes off. A storm ravages their seaside town. And Oliver is either going to be put in an orphanage or he's going to go off and find his father. And that is what he does. And he has all sorts of adventures, meets all sorts of characters. And this is the first book of a series. I won't tell you how it ends, but he will not be in England on the next one.
Okay. The Unexpected Life of Oliver Cromwell Pitts by Avi, right?
Avi.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And I should point out later on today we'll have the titles, all the titles we talked about today, including some we probably didn't get to, they'll be on our website, kcur.org/up-to-date. Dennis Ross, let's go to The Nameless City.
And actually, do you mind if I skip ahead to what's called Rad American Women, A to Z?
Rad American Women. Let's move ahead to American Women, A to Z.
Because I think it's important to recognize that same as with adults, a lot of young readers prefer nonfiction. And we don't want to just try to give them the idea that reading only means novels.
That's right.
You know, that one woman called in with a great recommendation for The Horrible History. There's a lot of really fun things like that.
Mm-hmm. And you're talking to a nonfiction guy,
yeah.
don't you know?
Yeah. And this is, it's really thin. It's easy. It's very browsable. There's all these really kind of hip, colorful portraits of each person. There's 25 women profiled in this, and each one for all the letters of the alphabet. And so it's easy to browse. And there are women who have or are still making history as artists, writers, teachers, lawyers, athletes. They come from all kinds of economic and ethnic backgrounds. There's one woman for each alphabetical letter, so it starts with Angela Davis, an activist, and there's also Zora Neale Hurston and Carol Burnett and Temple Grandin and Rachel Carson and Sonia Sotomayor and some bunch of women I had never heard of before. The letter X is designated for the women who, quote, we haven't learned about yet, and the women whose stories we will never read. And at the end, it challenges young readers to be strong and to make a difference in their own communities and suggests 26 things that they can do to be rad themselves.
Okay.
So
what a great idea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That book, Rad American Women A to Z by Kate Schatz, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, we are out of time, but what a list we went through today. Thanks to all our callers for their great recommendations, and that really helped move this show along. I want to thank retired librarian Debbie McLeod, Dennis Ross, director of youth services at the Johnson County Public Library, and Kate McNair with the teen services. She's a teen services coordinating librarian. Mm-hmm. Thank you all for a great conversation.
Well, thanks for having
you.
Happy
summer
reading.
Y'all.
It's
always
you bet.
Fun. Yes, read
great.
Away.
You bet. You can find us on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. You can follow me at Steve Kraske. And don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook. On Monday, the powerful political transformation of Robert Kennedy in the years following the JFK assassination. Also the part Dark Money plays in Missouri politics. The great Bobby Watson composed our theme music. We always appreciate Bobby's work. We had help this week from Chris Pruitt, Linda Scher, Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Coy Duggar, and Marlia Campbell. Have a great weekend, all. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.